The 40 for 80 podcast is presented by Georgia Farm Bureau, always the home team. Now, here's your host, Jeff Dantzler.
Hello and welcome to 40 for 80, the sweetest season. This is episode 8 in our Chronicles of Georgia's magical 12-0 run to the 1980 National Championship. Today, we revisit the Bulldogs' unforgettable 13-10 victory over the South Carolina Gamecocks in a showdown highlighted by two Heisman Trophy tailbacks. Our special guest today, and we thank them for their return. Two Georgia Bulldog greats, All-American place kicker out of Marietta, Rex Robinson, and NCAA postgraduate scholarship honoree, the starting Rover, Chris Welton, number 5 and number 10. I'm your host, Jeff Dantzler. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for joining us today. Chris, I'd like to lead off with you, the setup, the stakes. Georgia 7-0, ranked number 4. South Carolina 6-1, ranked 13th. The Gamecocks had won at Michigan. Their only loss was to Marcus Allen and USC. Herschel Walker, George Rogers on a gorgeous day between the hedges.
Yeah, it was, Coach Russell epitomized it the best. We had a common practice on Saturday mornings on game day where we would meet for pregame meal at 9:15, or the pregame meal was at 9:15. We would meet at 9 o'clock in the little conference room that was across from the dining hall. And the way it would typically go, would Coach Dooley would make a few remarks, nothing very technical. But it's Saturday morning. If you don't know what you're supposed to do by Saturday morning, you've got problems. But he would give a little talk, and then George Hafner, the offensive coordinator, would go through the offensive game plan, and then Coach Russell would step up and go through the defensive game plan. Each just 3 or 4 minutes, and again, nothing particularly complicated. But on this particular day, Coach Russell showed up, and when we had gone through Coach Dooley's remarks and Coach Hafner's remarks, he stepped to the front of the room. And on game day, Coach Russell would always he would have a freshly shaved and shined head, so he'd come in there with that magnificent, beautiful head of his. He would typically wear gray pants, a black sport coat, black and white saddle Oxfords, and then a red tie. Just a classic look that only Coach Russell could pull off. And on this particular day, after he briefly went through the game plan, he turned and looked out the window, and he said, "Men, look outside." He said, "It's a beautiful day." And this was actually November 1st, but the high was going to be about 70. So it's just a perfect day. And he said, "Look outside. It's a beautiful day. There's not a cloud in the sky. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. South Carolina's coming in. They're number 5. We're number 3. They've got George. We've got Herschel." And he turns back to the team and looks at us. And he says, he pauses for a second, and he just says, "God Almighty, what an opportunity." And that was the way Coach Russell was. It was just a simple statement. He wasn't yelling. He wasn't screaming. But, man, your heart started racing. Your blood got pumping. And that was the way we got ready for that game on that particular Saturday morning.
And, Rex, the great man certainly summed it up there. Just a tremendous setting. And when you consider how good these two teams were, the teams that both Georgia and South Carolina had beaten, and, of course, to have Herschel Walker and George Rogers as the two stars on this one. What do you remember heading into it, Rex, on what really was just a golden Saturday?
Well, first of all, listening to Chris recount that, I'm ready to go right now. that was very well done. Again, South Carolina was one of those teams that had always been super competitive game to game. We've sort of dominated the series, but it always seemed back in those days, we went 2-2 in our 4 years against them. And, I had gotten to know George Rogers during the recruiting process. I would see him different places. And so having that relationship kind of made it a little bit different. But it was always competitive. And a few years ago at one of our reunions, we got DVDs of all the games from 1980. And, a lot of them were from the televised games like this one. But a lot of them were just wide versions of our team film that the guys would watch, the next day after the game. But looking at that game and not just the highlights like you might see on ESPN or SEC Network, but watching that entire game, it was unbelievably hard fought. I mean, you hear, you think about or you hear about how hard-hitting games used to be. And this game was probably the most amazingly hard-hitting competitive game I can ever remember. So looking back on it and seeing it and remembering things that maybe I never even saw the first time around were just amazing.
What Rex just said, Chris, certainly bears that out. And I'm just looking at the defensive statistics here. The meat cleaver, Eddie Weaver, had 12 tackles. Nate Taylor and Frank Ross, 12 stops each. Chris, you had 7 tackles. Jeff Hipp had 8. Tim Crow had a great game on the defensive line with 9 tackles. But Pat McShay blocked a punt, just on and on and on. And, Chris, I've got to think for a game like this, South Carolina didn't throw very much. In fact, in this game, they just completed a couple of passes. Was a lot of your assignment in this game kind of being, say, the defense's version of that lead blocker and just trying to take somebody on to help set up other players to make tackles?
Part of the reason that I was a little more involved in this game from the standpoint of stopping the run was that South Carolina came out in 2 tight ends and ran those 2 tights most of the game. They also came out in a twins formation where I did play more of a traditional defensive back role. But when they came out in 2 tight ends, I moved up on the line of scrimmage, and I was more it was more like playing an outside linebacker position. So for me personally, it was a much more physical game than normally the defensive backs are involved in. And they also ran a lot of option. South Carolina had been a veer team. When George started to become more preeminent, they would run an I formation, but then sometimes they would shift into split backs and run a traditional veer. And, you know, Coach Russell's defense, the split 60, was designed to really stop the option. And part of that job for me, if it came my way, was I had to make sure that they didn't get to the sideline, the ball carrier didn't get to the sideline, they didn't make a pitch, and then I would collapse back down if they handed it off or if the quarterback kept. So I was in the middle of the action a lot more than I typically would be with all the big body guys. The other thing that they did, I actually did go back and watch the game on YouTube. You can still find it, believe it or not. And this was before, 1980 was before the crackback rule was instituted. So when I would be lined up, when they'd be in twins with a wide receiver outside of me and they tried to run outside, that wide receiver would come down and hit you low and try to chop you from the blind side. And I was coming off ACL surgery from a year later, so I was pretty protective of those knees. But it, as Rex said, it was really a physical ball game, and there were no kind of soft tackles made. People were getting after it, really hard hitting, a lot of noise. You could hear the crunch, and just a very physical ball game based on the styles of the two football teams.
Rex, and obviously what happened against Florida, what happened against Notre Dame. I think in many ways, though, this might have been our most win. You give South Carolina credit. They had the goal line stand in the first half, and even at the end of the game, they stopped us down there on the 1-yard line. We got down inside the 5 to start the game and couldn't score. So when your second field goal went through, we're up 13-0. It could have been 23-27-0 at that point. And I think, you know, speaking of resiliency, you missed an early one. It sailed wide. It was a short one, certainly uncharacteristically. Then you come back later on the last play of the first quarter and nail through a 57-yarder to give us the lead 3-0. I want to talk about that one first. Now, you also hit a 51-yarder in the third quarter, 2 of your great kicks of all time. I know for kickers, you've got to have a short memory, but you got to be just, pardon the pun, kicking yourself for missing the short one. And then you come through with an all-time great kick. So kind of take us through your lows and highs of that first quarter in your game that Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you were going to bring this up, but anyway you know, it was not an awful kick, but it's purely an alignment thing. I mean, it's like if you don't address the golf ball, if your stance is not proper, you're not going to hit it in the right direction. And that's all it was I guess kind of lackadaisical, because it was such a short kick. That should never happen, but it did. And yeah, it was always important to just assess what just happened, make the necessary change and just move on. So I was thankful to be able to have a chance to get back in the game pretty quickly and get us on the board.
The 57-yarder, do you remember anything in particular about it, the setup, the wind, what was going through your mind?
Oh, there was a definite wind, you know, coming from the bridge, which was pretty much always the case. And, you know, that did help a little bit. It also, the second kick that you mentioned was against that same wind. And so typically that year I was very confident in for whatever reason, my preparation, things were just in a really good place for me mentally. And so I felt like I was going to make a kick every time I went out. Didn't matter the distance. That last year, things had kind of come together for me. And so again, to miss that short one was inexcusable, but to have an opportunity to make the longer kick and get us on the board was very important.
Chris, in a game like this, so hard hitting, as you guys have talked about, so physical, so much familiarity between these two teams, getting on the board, Rex's monster kick there had to give you a huge lift. And in a game like this where you know it's going to be tight, I've got to think drawing first blood was extra important.
So I'm going to blow Rex's horn here a little bit. I don't think he realizes how much influence he had on both sides of the ball, on how well we played and obviously special teams. But people don't realize that we won 5 of our 12 games by a total of 13 points, and then we won 2 more games by 7 points. So we didn't have too many blowouts. And when you're playing defense or the guys playing offense, when you have in the back of your mind that if you can keep it close, if we on defense could keep them from scoring too many points at the end of the game or an important point in the game, we could pull 3 points out with a lot of confidence, because Rex said he had gotten comfortable that year. Well, we had all gotten extremely comfortable with him. And we knew that was a weapon that most teams in the country didn't have. And it was something that was very important and very motivating to both sides of the ball.
And the thing that made this 1980 team so great was the way the offense, the defense, and the special teams all played off of one another. And again, you know, Chris, I brought this up, that we left a lot of points on the table that day. And for a lot of teams, when it got really tight, it might have been oh my gosh, you know, we should be up 27-10, and it's only 13-10. But Chris, you guys just seem to thrive in these tight games.
Yeah, I think you have to have a short-term memory with as a kicker, but the same thing applies to the position players as well. You can't cry over missed opportunities. You just have to deal with the situation that exists before each and every play, frankly. So as it got close, this was a little different for us in that some of the previous games we had been behind and had to come back, Tennessee most notably. In this game, we got a 13 points back then with our defense and our ability to eat up the clock on offense was a pretty comfortable lead. And it just sort of seemed to gradually slip out of our hands. The other running back, not George, but the other running back had a nice touchdown run that made it 13-7. And then they got a field goal, or maybe they got a field goal first. I can't exactly remember, but you know, it just sort of slipped out. And then now we're in a dogfight, and we really did have to, and we had to come up with a big play at the end. But we didn't seem to pout or spend too much time worrying about what might have been. We just had to deal with, as I said, the circumstances that existed before each play, and then go play that play as well as you can.
Rex, just being involved in a game like this, and obviously Herschel had the 76-yard run, which I asked him many years ago what his best run at Georgia was, and he said it was that 76-yarder. Larry Munson had an unbelievable call, and the 4 guys had an angle on him. This was certainly one of his greatest games, and I'm sure the view that you had down on the field when the big man went straight Olympic 100-yard dash sprinter there was unforgettable.
Well, I tell you, it was sort of like that same scenario talking about the run Lindsay run play. Mm-hmm. when we were on our side of the 50, I was pretty much cheerleader. When we crossed the 50-yard line, I would start getting ready to do my thing in case I was called upon. And so I didn't see much of that run because I was scrambling to go get my kicking block like we used to use back in the day. And, you know, it wasn't until the next day, probably on the Vince Dooley show, that I actually saw the run itself. And so, and you know, obviously have seen it 1,000 times since. And it's just, it never gets old. It's amazing.
And when you think about, you know, Herschel has 219 yards. George Rogers has 168 yards. In that era, that there were so many great backs, and Herschel was the best, and George was right there as well. I know when you're in the heat of battle, it's you might not fully appreciate it, but after that game, and I would guess as time has gone by, to see these two all-time greats doing what they did against tremendous defenses that day, it was really something to appreciate.
It really was. I mean, it just – it couldn't be – more indicative of what football was like in the 70s and 80s before all the changes that had been made. And it was a totally different game.
Chris, you know, Coach Cavan brought up beyond the obvious reasons we needed to get Herschel, and that there are about 1.5 million of them, but also, you know, George was from Duluth, Georgia, had gone to South Carolina. We had lost Eddie Lee Ivory, who went to Tech, at Brooks and James and William Andrews had all gone to Auburn. So we had a lot of these great backs that had gotten away, and South Carolina had beaten us the previous 2 years. So here we are, Herschel and George going into this thing. And Chris, you were in the same class as George. So I know there was a lot of familiarity there. And this had to be one of those two. When it's over, you just shake each other's hands and know what a great physical game you'd been in.
George was from right up the road from me in Duluth, Georgia, which at that time was a fairly rural area. And I went to Peachtree High School in Dunwoody. He was in a one classification lower, so we never played in high school, but we played together with a number of the guys from our class in the high school all-star game. And so, and of course, you know, on the awards circuit after your senior year, you run into some of the usual suspects from time to time. So I knew George pretty well. And, you know, he was a quiet, very quiet guy. But he was a friendly guy. And, you know, we knew he was good, but he, in his 4 years at South Carolina, he just kept getting better and better and stronger. I'm suspecting that he probably was in a much better weight program than he had been in high school. And they really got the most out of him. But, yeah, it was good that we had Herschel, and man, what a duel it was, and both defenses had to play as hard as they could to do what we could to contain them.
We got to run into a timeout, but before we get there, Chris, I just wanted to throw one more thing before I forget about it. I remember a story you had told me once before the Ballou to Scott play, and obviously we had won all these close games, and just to blow Rex's horn again here. That I remember you telling me, you looked at Coach Russell and said, all we got to do is get a couple first downs, because the feeling was if we got across the 50, Rex would hit the field goal to win the game.
That's exactly right. That was one reason that we felt confident, even though we're back on our own 8-yard line and had a long way to go. We didn't have to go 92 yards. I'm glad we did, and that was exciting and a lot of fun. But the feeling was, you know, if you can give Rex, you know, inside 55 yards, we got a better than average chance of making it. So there was nobody at any point in the Florida game or the South Carolina game that was, you know, we were close enough to win it with a field goal, and that's all we ever needed.
It is Georgia and South Carolina. What a game it was. We'll get down to the end of the second quarter, Herschel's run, and take you through the second half. Chris Welton and Rex Robinson, two all-time great Bulldogs. Thanks so much for being with us. It's 40 for 80, the sweetest season, right here on the Georgia Bulldogs Sports Network.
From the farmer's field that produces your food to the football field where your home team plays, Georgia Farm Bureau is committed to helping Georgia communities thrive. Georgia Farm Bureau provides peace of mind to families through home, auto, and life insurance with affordable coverage and fast claim services. By insuring with Georgia Farm Bureau, you're making an investment in Georgia agriculture, Georgia farmers, and Georgia families. With more than 150 offices in the state, Georgia Farm Bureau is always the home team.
Welcome back to 40 for 80, the sweetest season, Georgia and South Carolina. All right, Rex, here we are. We're down fourth and goal on the 1-yard line, 3-0, closing seconds of the first half. We make the decision to go for the touchdown and South Carolina stops us. Was there much conversation to kick it? What do you remember at that point? And then when they did stop us again, you know, that was another shot. We had to get a touchdown, but didn't get it. And it's only 3-0 at that point. So kind of take us through that whole scenario there.
You know, I never was one to like hang out right next to Coach Dooley or listen to those kind of discussions. I tried to be within his peripheral vision in case he wanted me to go out, but I didn't like hang out right next to him. And so I don't know exactly what was discussed, but I do think it was the right thing to do. I mean, when you're on the one, to settle for a field goal is kind of a letdown. So I never felt like that it was the wrong thing to do. It was definitely the right thing to attempt. But, you know, again, it was a great defensive struggle. South Carolina made the play, and we fortunately were able to survive it all.
By the way, Rex, your successor, another great All-American who wore number 5, he did not operate the same way. You go back and watch any old game, when it was third down, Kevin Butler was right there next to Vince Dooley.
I am familiar with that. I've seen plenty of video footage and pictures. That's very indicative of our personalities. I'm laid back and kind of in the background. He's out front and center. And so I've always known that and not surprised at all.
Hey, Chris, you know, kind of going back to the goal line stand, this was the first game of the year that was on television. I know it's amazing to think about the Georgia-Tennessee, Georgia-Clemson. Those games weren't on TV, and they stopped us down there on the goal line. Was the Notre Dame game the first game that we started going Herschel over the top? Do you remember the first time that happened? Because in my mind, when we started doing that, that was the greatest short yardage weapon there had ever been.
Yeah, I don't think we did it much until the Notre Dame game. I can't remember a specific instance. I know Herschel, the next year, Herschel's sophomore year, that became a staple of the offense. But, you know, again, just to kind of amplify what Rex said, you know, with that offensive line that we had, which and we've talked about this before, I still consider to be the best offensive line in Georgia football history. And with that running back, it's hard to justify kicking the ball when you got it on the 1 yard line. And I also agree with Rex that I think it sends a message that's not a great message to everyone. And so, yeah, it was the right call. We didn't execute it the way we should have, but that was a rare thing for us not to, with that, again, with that line and that running back, it was a rare thing for us not to execute. So, but that was just another example of what I was talking about before. So we didn't make it, and, you know, but we did have them backed up and time for defense to go on the field, and or the half was over. But you just can't cry over spilled milk. You got to get out there and deal with the circumstances as they're presented to you.
Chris, the 76-yarder came to start the second half. You know, talking about Rex's kick giving the team a lift. What was your view? Were you standing on the sidelines? Were you sitting down on the bench? What was your view of the run? And can you talk about the energy on the bench when Herschel made that incredible dash up the north sidelines?
No, I had gone – when we came off the field, I'd gone to get some Gatorade or whatever it was we were drinking at that time. But then I'd walked back up closer to the sideline. So I had a very good view of it. And I was like everybody else when I saw him get outside. Yeah. I was thinking, well, that's a big run, but they've got the angle on him. And then all of a sudden those jets come on. And, that was really something to behold, to see him just, those guys did have the angle, there were two or three of them, and he just turned it on. And I, when I was watching the game again the other night, I noted that when Herschel would jog off the field, he'd take these kind of little baby steps, and he kind of looked like an old slow man. But then when he'd run the ball, it was just amazing to see the speed he had. And you know, we're a little more used to in this day and age to seeing, you know, big, strong, powerful guys who've got pretty good speed, but no one had ever seen anything like that before. A guy who was 225 pounds, as strong as he was, and could run like that. And that's why he was so special.
Rex, we follow up the long touchdown. You come right back and you bang a 51-yarder that puts us up 13-0. Obviously, we had the momentum at that point. Kind of take us through that kick. And now this time you're going back the other way towards the bridge. What are your memories of the 51-yarder?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the wind was coming from the bridge, and you had to fight the tendency to want to hit the ball a little harder to make sure you got it there. You just, because then things go awry. But it was really just important to just be smooth, hit it solid, and give it a good chance.
So we go up 13-0 at this point, and then the momentum starts to shift a little bit. As Chris mentioned, a South Carolina comes back to make a field goal. They make it 13-3, and then the off running back West has a long touchdown. All of a sudden, it's 13-10. So, you know, Rex, you can feel that momentum start to change. So when this goes from 13-0 through 13-10, what's going through your mind? What's the mood on the sidelines?
Well, you know, again, my main focus 90% of the time was to try to support the defense when they were out there in the offense. And I typically would be wherever that ball was on the field, I was going to be on the opposite end of the field. Somewhere along the line, I developed that routine and or superstition. I know for sure that it had to be a little bit tighter, a little bit more focused. But like Chris said, I don't think we ever lost confidence. It was just a matter of focusing in on the task at hand and finishing the game.
All right, Chris, let's move to the middle of the fourth quarter. There's 7 minutes and 20 seconds to go when South Carolina's got the ball. We're up 13-10. Rodgers for 9, Rodgers for 3, Rodgers for 8, Rodgers for 7. They're sitting on our 20, then West for 3. And, you know, I've got to imagine that big offensive line and George just leaning on you like that. You know, where was the defense at that point leading up to the fumble? Because just like we were leaning on Herschel, they were leaning on their big man.
I think it demonstrates exactly why Coach Russell ran the defense that he did. We've talked about it before. You know, our philosophy was bend but don't break. With a guy like George, he could have done to us what Herschel did to them because he had that kind of speed, not Herschel kind of speed, but enough speed to pull off a big run. But our defensive philosophy was make them run a lot of plays. It's really hard for an offense, and you see it in today's game exemplified a lot with people going to more of an explosive style, because it is really hard for an offense to run 12, 14 plays in a row and not make a mistake. And especially when you have a defense that is putting multiple helmets on the ball, all 11 players are running to the football. You know, we just had an expectation that if we play our game, obviously we didn't want some of those longer runs that you just described to happen. But if they did, at least make sure that at the end of that 10 yards, the guy pays the price, the ball carrier pays the price. And, you know, that has a tendency to wear down the ball carriers. And as I said, it's more likely somebody is going to make a mistake, whether they're going to, you know, there's going to be a drop ball, there's going to be a penalty of some sort that helps us stop the drive. But, you know, they're moving and moving and moving. And sort of according to plan, they made a mistake at the end of it, and that we were able to get the ball.
And George Rogers fumbles, and you talk about gang tackling, just that play. Tim Parks is right in there. Chris, you and Frank Ross. I know Scott Werner's reaching a hand in there. Just a total team effort. And we come up with the ball with 5.5 minutes to go. So, you know, you guys make the stand, and now all of a sudden this game is really in our hands. So if you could kind of take us through the play and then what it felt like, you know, everybody always remember you jumping up and pointing our way with that left arm there. So take us through the fumble and the play.
Well, first of all, jumping up and pointing with my left arm is part of the strategy, because I've gotten credit for recovering that ball, and I did not. I know Timmy Parks knocked it loose. And if I had to guess, just based on his propensity for this sort of thing, I'd say McShay probably recovered it, because if there was a ball on the ground, that guy was tough to beat to it. He really was. And as he said on one of your earlier podcasts, you know, if there had been some – if we could actually advance a fumble back in that day, he might have had a couple of touchdowns too. But, you know, it's just like I said, it was – you know, we were playing as hard as we possibly could. And we would – you know, from the day those of us, you know, got to Georgia and were playing defense, we would start practice on the defensive side of the ball and end practice with a run to the ball drill. Just Coach Russell would just throw it around, and all 11 guys on the defense would have to run to the football. And so it was kind of ingrained in us. And what that meant was there were a lot of people engaged in hitting the ball carrier. And then if a ball did come out, there were a lot more of us around than them, which increased the possibility or the probability that we'd be able to recover it. So that particular play, while it was one of the great plays of the season and a very important play, it was not out of character, because that's just the way we played football. And that's the way, you know, again, that's the reason that we led the country in turnover ratio, is because we made that happen a lot. And our offense was very disciplined about holding on to the football, and they didn't turn it over many times.
Led the nation in turnover margin. The punt return exchange still amazes me. 15.7 for Scott Werner, 8 total yards on the year. And the offense and defense and special teams playing in each other. And, of course, we had the greatest kicker in the country in Rex Robinson. And Rex, this is one of those little footnotes that's very important. So we get the ball back. They stop Herschel just short. It's 4th and 1. We're on our own 25. We go back to punt with Malkiewicz. They rough it, and we get the first down. And then, you know, Herschel breaks off a long one, and we wind up not scoring. But we took the clock down to under a minute to go, and that was just another one of those cases where, you know, going back to kind of what Chris said, they made a mistake. We made a big play on special teams, Rex, and we were able to capitalize.
Absolutely. I mean, I understand why they might have gone after Malkiewicz, but you know, in desperation. But yeah, to finish it off like that, and it seemed like we got down there pretty close again, but chose to just run the clock out, which was a class thing to do. That doesn't happen a whole lot these days, but yeah, it was very gratifying to survive and to win what was really just a huge heavyweight fight.
It was such an enormous win. And again, obviously you guys are playing, you don't realize this, but I was 8 years old at the time, and everybody, you could feel the momentum, you know, listen to the radio, Herschel Walker at Tennessee, the win over Clemson, you know, Amp Arnold's long touchdown against Kentucky, Herschel's runs against Vandy. And now all of a sudden, not only did the whole country, but every Georgia fan who hadn't gotten a chance to go to a game got to see this team play. Could you feel, Rex, I'll start with you, any extra attention because this game was on national TV and it was Herschel and George after this one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think I'd mentioned previously in our other discussion that by the Vanderbilt game, we were getting a lot of notice. Obviously, Herschel was on the on everyone's radar, but for this to be, you know, to only play on television twice a year back in those days, and for this one to be nationally televised was just huge. I mean, you know, we had other games that were regional. Can't remember another national game that we might have had in the previous years. There might have been one, but, you know, just to have that stage, and looking back, and Al Michaels, I think, was the guy. And the fact that he's still doing it, you know, is amazing. You know, we didn't know who Al Michaels was back then. I didn't. But it was just all around just an amazing Saturday, and really kind of set the stage for us to finish strong that year.
Chris, just kind of same thing to you. Could you feel it a little bit more after this one with all the national attention?
Well, I could. And I do want to mention one thing before I answer that question regarding – special teams and the roughing on Malkiewicz. I know one of the reasons they probably decided to rush Mark was we had a play earlier in the game where Mark dropped the snap on a punt and the ball hit the ground. He picked it up. He dropped it again, but the ball bounced up in the air and he kicked it and got about a 30 or 35 yard punt out of it. And so, you know, we ended up in from a defensive standpoint in good field position, but that was just an amazingly, I mean, it was a very athletic play on his part, leaving aside the drop in the ball. But again, that was just the kind of thing where when we had, when something happened, somebody made chicken salad out of, well, I won't say chicken what, but he just made a good play. And then, you know, it probably worked again in our favor when they thought that he might get a little rattled and drop it again down there on the goal line. They end up roughing him. So it's just amazing how things that happen in the game that may seem like little things end up having a much bigger impact. But moving on to your broader question, your original question, I knew who Al Michaels was because he had just that year called the Miracle on Ice game when the U.S. hockey team beat the Russians in the Lake Placid Olympics. I happened to be in Cooper's that day, that Friday afternoon, and it was a few football players, a good number of several motorcycle gangs that I guess were friendly with each other, and then just your various and sundry rednecks. And most of the people in Cooper's did not have any idea about hockey. Couldn't tell a hockey puck from a volleyball, but they knew that we were beating the Russians in something, and that was good enough. So that was a great experience. And then moving forward to, it is hard to imagine for people now that this is the eighth game of the year and it's our first time on television. You could only be, under NCAA rules, you could only be on television twice during the regular season and then the bowl game. So South Carolina was on television, then Florida the next week was on television, and that was it. And so I know you're Larry Munson's biggest fan, Jeff, and that's the way people consume Georgia football, because we had, you know, 62,000 people in the stadium at that time. And then everybody else heard Larry's version of it. And that's why he's so revered, is because I know for myself growing up, when I became a Georgia fan, was listening to Larry. So, you know, having an opportunity to play on a nationally televised game, we're ranked number three. At that point, going in, at that point, we knew Southern Cal and Notre Dame had to play each other. So we would at least, if we controlled our own destiny, if we won out, we knew we would be at least one or two. So it's national championship gets real in a hurry at that point. Having said that, you know, South Carolina was the first week of the gauntlet of South Carolina and then Florida and then Auburn. So we were excited about that game, but we knew we still had a lot of work to do.
And we will cover that aftermath as we continue on and put a bow on this great day. A golden Saturday between the hedges. Georgia 13, South Carolina 10. Our very special guest, number 5, Rex Robinson, number 10, Chris Welton. This is 40 for 80, the sweetest season on the Georgia Bulldog Sports Network.
From the farmer's field that produces your food to the football field where your home team plays, Georgia Farm Bureau is committed to helping Georgia communities thrive. Georgia Farm Bureau provides peace of mind to families through home, auto, and life insurance with affordable coverage and fast claim services. By insuring with Georgia Farm Bureau, you're making an investment in Georgia agriculture, Georgia farmers, and Georgia families. With more than 150 offices in the state, Georgia Farm Bureau is always the home team.
Welcome back. It is 40 for 80, the sweetest season. I'm your host, Jeff Dance. Our special guests, Bulldog greats, All-American Rex Robinson, starting Rover back Chris Welton, who is an NCAA postgraduate honoree. And Rex, kind of going to what Chris was saying there, and I think it's gotten around the internet, Coach Russell receiving the game ball and from Frank Ross and what he said about Florida, the mule they rode in on. But on this day, when we win, going back to what Chris was saying, Alabama was ranked number one. They lost to Mississippi State. UCLA got upset at Arizona. So we get this great win. And when those rankings come out the next day, it's Notre Dame number one and Georgia number two. And I know all the focus is still week to week, and you're enjoying that win and then thinking about Florida. But when you see our dogs up there ranked at number two, I know you're starting to think, man, this could all come together.
Well, a little bit. You know, back in those days, it was so much easier to avoid the hype, because all you had to do is, especially if there was anything negative going on, that all you had to do is avoid the newspaper. These days with social media and everything, it is so much more hyped. And you have a really difficult time not reading and understanding what's at stake. I think Chris may feel differently. I don't remember anything really being hyped around the team. They were so good at just focusing on the task at hand and, the cliche of one game at a time. And it was Florida. The next game was Florida, and that was never overlooked. So I don't remember personally any uneasiness or nervousness or maybe some extra excitement, when you go out to practice, there's a little bit of electricity or whatever. But, that happened a lot that year because things were going so well.
Chris, how about with you? I know you made allusion to it. Here we are. We're number two in the country now, getting ready for one of the biggest Georgia-Florida games of all time, coming off one of our biggest wins ever against a great South Carolina team.
Yeah, I agree with Rex that there wasn't anything in particular that we did. When things are going well during a season, there's a little more of a relaxed atmosphere around practice. So we had a pretty standard ritual that, and playing afternoon games was kind of nice too, because we could go back and see our parents and hang out with them and then, have some decent amount of time to go out and relax a little bit that night. But we were back in, we had a 9 o'clock meeting every Sunday where, we'd only meet for about 10 minutes and then they'd make us go out and run a mile or so. And that was not so much to discourage activities from the night before, but it was more so that they could find out if anybody had any injuries. Because a lot of times in a very physical ball game, you can't tell the difference between whether you're just sore and bruised up or whether you actually have an injury. So trying to run a mile sort of brings that out. But then when we would meet at 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon to go through the film. And again, after a win, when everybody played pretty well, it's kind of relaxed. And then you move into Monday and it's in shorts. And then we have the Bloody Tuesday practices, but everybody, everybody's walking around with a smile on their face because we're playing well. And the fortunate thing was, we get back to the great senior class that we had. We were mature enough to realize that we had an opportunity, and we had to focus and be serious to take advantage of that opportunity when it was time. Yep, you can smile, you can laugh, you can have fun. Coach Russell is always going to keep people loose, but when it came time to work hard and practice, and then prepare for the game, and then during the game, you've got this opportunity, and you need to do your job in order to make sure that the team can take advantage of that opportunity.
All right, gentlemen, just a final word from each of you. Again, Rex, you have one of your best games making those two monster field goals, and here we sit at 8-0 with those Gators coming up. And what a special day it was on this incredible season. So if you could just talk about the team, and again, just it still amazes me, and it says so much, the incredible camaraderie this group, especially you seniors, still have.
I always attribute that to the fact that we came in as freshmen, and that 1977 year was not good at all. And during our first 3 years, we had ups and downs. I think the guys that ended up being the leaders on that 80 team could see the differences in year to year and what it actually took to finish a game and a season. So I think that those guys that were all in key positions on the team really made it happen. Herschel was a huge part of that, but you can have all the talent in the world, and if you don't have the leadership, it's just not going to matter.
Chris, just a final word for me. I do want to mention, too, we're having to do this. Our great center, Hugh Nall, was injured. He was out, so we're playing Wayne Radloff and Joe Happy there, and just so many people contributed to this team. And I think that is part of what leads to the great camaraderie that y'all still share, Chris.
Well, that's right. And I know you mentioned last week that Coach Dooley made the decision for the first time that I knew about after Hugh had his knee injury to have him travel with us. And so even though we missed him on the field, We didn't have to miss his leadership, his enthusiasm, his toughness. That he brought that along with him, and he was standing there on crutches, but you know he was still heavily involved in that game. And then you know when you talk about the substitutions, I mean Radloff and Blake Wood and Happy were all great players, but it didn't hurt them that they're lining up next to Hudson and Harper and Morrison, who they still had that great senior leadership. So we didn't miss much from an on the field perspective, and we were able to still take advantage of Hugh's just what all of those intangible things that Hugh brought to it. So it was just another step on that road to 12-0 that we were going down. And when the game was over, it was time to get ready for the next one. I'll just tell one little anecdote to finish it off here is the Sunday before the Tennessee game, when we came into the meeting room, Coach Lewis had written up on the chalkboard, "This will be win number one." And we kind of nod our heads and so the Sunday after Tennessee, we walk in the meeting room and he has written up on the board, "This will be win number two." And that continued on down to when we got ready for bowl practice, and up on the board was, "This will be win number 12. And that's the way we took it. We literally took it one week at a time. Every coach says that, but we actually executed that and pulled it off.
And some great news, too. The classic game, Bulldogs over Gamecocks 13-10, is going to be replayed this week on the SEC Network. So check your local listings. What probably couldn't be, but I still want to try and do some broadcasts. Next time you guys get together for a reunion and Nat Hudson has some of his famous moonshine guys, I think that'd make for a great show from Chris Welton's farm.
Well, you guys are always welcome to the farm. We'll have to put it to a vote as to whether we're allowing members of the media in, though. But you personally are always welcome.
The statute of limitations is given out, right?
Absolutely. And I am in full support of this idea, so I will be there.
Well, guys, thank y'all so much. I love y'all both. And thank you for everything you've done for Georgia. And I can't thank you enough for being a part of this. This is the funnest project I've ever worked on. And going through this week by week has been a blast. So, Rex, Chris, thank y'all both so much.
Thank you.
Jeff, thank you for all you do for Georgia.
All right, guys, that's the great Chris Welton, the great Rex Robinson. I'd like to thank our producers and engineers, Alan Thomas, Mike Bilbo, Cabell Philpott, Drew Brackett, and Rick Starrett. And thank you again to two most distinguished Bulldogs, Chris Welton and Rex Robinson. Next week, we revisit Georgia's 26-21 victory over Florida in Jacksonville. But for now, that chapel bell is ringing loud as the Bulldogs have beaten South Carolina 13-10. Thanks so much for listening to Episode 8, 40 for 80, the sweetest season, right here on the Georgia Bulldogs Sports Network.
The 40 for 80 podcast is presented by Georgia Farm Bureau, always the home team. Join us next time to hear more about Georgia's magical run to the 1980 National Championship.